And now the story of the wealthy Hollywood business who lost original ideas and the two podcasters who had no choice but to review them together. It's Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast?
About unoriginality. Let's do this.
Let's go.
All right, guys. Welcome. Hi, Rolando.
How you doing?
Pretty good. Hi, Edizi.
Hey, guys.
Edizi's wearing a really nice Star Wars shirt on today. It's really cute. I like it.
Sundays are my geeky days.
Oh
no. And I'm wearing green.
And yes, because today, the day before you listen to this, is St. Patrick's Day.
Happy belated St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, I hope you guys are beautifully hungover.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I mean, tomorrow should be like, you know, observed
at St.
Patrick's Day, so that way you can go into work hungover and not really get any shit from your boss.
That's true.
Yeah.
Just like the day after Memorial Day should, and
mm-hmm.
like, come on, get with it, people. And this passed recently on Netflix. There has been a new release of season 5.
Yeah, just dropped, I want to say maybe Thursday. I'm not 100% sure.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Because now I'm seeing it all over Netflix and I wasn't seeing it, so it's definitely new.
March 15th was the official date when it dropped, yeah.
So, if you don't know, now you know. Season 5 of Arrested Development is out now on Netflix.
Actually, technically, it's the second half of season 5.
Second half of season
5. Yeah, the first half was dropped, let me see if I have the exact date. May of last year.
Oh.
They pulled like a Game of Thrones type of thing where they dropped half the season first and then
So it was 8 and then the other.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't know that because I just watched them all now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. And then we're going to definitely talk about how they filmed it because technically these events have been happening 2 years ago.
Yes.
So it's very interesting. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
So Arrested Development, do you guys like this show?
Were
you familiar with it before?
Of course. I've been watching Arrested Development since I started watching it in college, but not regularly because mm-hmm. I didn't know when it was on. And I think I used to watch it when it was on syndication on the IFC channel.
Oh.
Which I don't know if it still exists and stuff, but
okay.
One of the first scenes I ever saw was with my roommate when the doctor tells the family that that Buster is all right. And stuff. And that wordplay was just so fucking funny. And
it's such a, yeah, I love the literal doctor.
Yeah.
He's so great.
Yeah. So that was my introduction to Arrested Development. And then from there, when it finally landed on Netflix and stuff, like, I think that's probably when the show probably reached its max fandom.
Mm.
Because, you know, I think up until that point, it was just a cult classic. Like, only people who were really smart in the know were watching the show. That's why it got canceled after 3 seasons.
Yeah.
You know,
I actually remember when it was on the air. So I remember this because that was around the time Charlize Theron was winning all the awards for Monster.
Yes.
And then I saw her in the third season, like on regular TV. So uh-huh. I started watching that show and I thought it was wildly funny.
Yeah. And it's so funny because I think season 3 is the weakest season of the original run.
Yeah. I think second is my favorite.
Second. I think first actually might be my favorite.
First is very strong.
Yes.
Yeah. First into second. But I did. But actually I've grown a fondness for Mr. F. But disclaimer, we're big fans of the show.
Eddie Z, what about you? Experience with the show? I know I made you watch the show.
Yeah, you make me watch it. I actually enjoy it when I sit down and watch. I'm just not, I don't watch it religiously.
Yeah.
You know, in that sense, it's something when it's on in the background, I end up actually like, oh, wait a minute. And then I get stuck on one episode, watching another episode.
Yeah, I am definitely a big fan of the original run of the show. Oh, spoiler.
So yeah, we're gonna just so you know, we're fans of the show.
Yes.
So there's gonna be a lot of love here.
There's gonna be a lot of probably jumping around and this is all stream of consciousness at this point, what we're talking about. But
if you don't know what we're talking about, let's set up for when this show came out. It wasn't that long ago, but let's remember what it was like. So let's go back to 2002. This is the Bush era, okay?
Damn.
Yeah. George W. Bush, the junior. And this is also the age of Enron.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of kind of big family crises happening within the country. Mm-hmm. So Ron Howard, the filmmaker, who also is the founder and president of Imagine.
Yes. I actually don't know much about Ron Howard's work. I'm sure I do. Did he do? No, I was going to say.
You definitely know him. He did Apollo 13.
Oh, I didn't like that movie.
He did A Beautiful Mind.
Oh, that was his?
Yes, that was his.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's a good movie.
So he wanted to come up with a situational comedy that had like the style of handheld cameras in reality television, but with an elaborate, highly comical strip resulting from repeated rewritings and rehearsals.
Okay, so
it pretty much
get together and just read.
Yeah, they would improvise, and then bam, let's take that, let's write that.
Okay,
and then, yeah, kind of like I know Curb Your Enthusiasm was also like that, but the style isn't like it doesn't feel like reality TV. Like they really wanted it to feel like zoomed in camera and like a crew is following them.
Right.
Even though. Yeah, it's never addressed that it was
almost like a documentary because yeah. You know, you have the narrator and then you always have like footage missing, like I'm thinking specifically when like Lindsay and Tobias are talking, like we had some good times and then like
yeah,
just a white screen of this footage not found.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of like reality television meets documentary, but mm-hmm. then like there's a narrator, so it's got this beautiful like narration, this omnipresent person who's yes. telling you this story.
He's like the voice of God.
Yeah, and there's a lot of like cuts to either like the past or the future even, mm-hmm. or like, you know, just like beautiful references. It's a very well edited, presented show.
Yeah.
It's a very unique thing.
From a screenwriter's perspective, though, when I used to do script reading,
mm-hmm.
I used to hate writers who write flashbacks.
Mm.
This is one of the shows that I think does flashbacks very well.
I think so, too.
I think one of just the first season, just the first episode had one of the best flashbacks in which Lucille is talking about...
If you're saying I play favorites, you're wrong. I love all my children equally.
Flashback to a conversation earlier she had with Buster. She's just like...
I don't care for Job.
But it's interesting, too, because I feel like it's a very 21st century joke to like cut to either what they're talking about or cut mm-hmm. to the past. Like, you don't really see that. That's like a new development within sitcoms. Now everyone does this type of humor.
Yes.
And I don't know. I think Arrested Development was among the first to have that, like, cut to the past or cut to whatever they're referring to really quickly, like, interspersed with the original, like, storyline that you're following.
I think you're right on that because I don't remember when 30 Rock came out, but that's another one that...
Yeah,
does Family it exceptionally
Guy.
Well.
Yeah,
Family Guy. Yeah, that comes to mind obviously as a show yeah. that does a lot of cutaway jokes
for sure.
And but obviously, you know, no offense to Family Guy fans out there, but the writing on the first run of Arrested Development was way smarter than anything.
Oh yeah, no Family Guy. Yeah, let's not even get into Family Guy. But so yeah, so they wanted to take in the corporate accounting scandals,
mm-hmm.
and then I think there was definitely a fascination with like big families, like the Bush family, because this is the Bush family and like the Bush era, and Job. Mm-hmm. Is like his name is a direct reference to one of the Bush brothers, Jeb.
Oh, it's so funny. I never put that together.
Yeah. Like the G-O-B, J-E-B, and then, you know, Bluth, Bush. Like the similarities
okay.
and everything.
Okay.
Right. So it's like those two things put together. So they hired a writer, Mitchell Hurwitz, and he developed it and he... I was the head writer on it, and then they pitched it to Fox. I think it was in a bidding war between Fox and NBC, and then Fox, of all networks, was the one that picked it up.
Wow.
And the show originally lasted for three seasons.
Three seasons.
The and then it got canceled.
The third season was definitely, like, cut.
Yeah.
Like, the third one,
very
the order was, like, yeah, the third one, like, they let them know. They're like, we're canceling you guys, so
yeah.
you don't have a full season.
Yeah.
So wrap this shit up.
So, do you want to tell people what the show's about?
So the show follows the Bluth family, who are the owners, like the majority stakeholders for the Bluth company, which mm-hmm. is a construction company in America. And the SEC comes to discover that they have been basically using the company as their personal piggy bank.
Yes.
And their funds are frozen. And now this family that has kind of lived a luxurious, expensive life now find themselves having to deal with not the fact that they're poor because they still use the company money as a piggy bank. It's more like kind of dealing with the fact of like they're embroiled in this scandal.
Yeah.
That we come to discover is not just a financial scandal, but more like light treason.
Yes.
As it's called in the mm-hmm. show. Because George Bluth Sr. Had developed some properties in Iraq.
Yeah.
And this is, mind you, when we are in the middle of the Iraq war. So, or, yeah, and we're well in the Iraq war at this
right
point,
in the beginning, yeah. 2002, 2003 is when this show began. Mm-hmm. And then it was canceled in 2006.
Okay, yeah.
So, very much the
right,
Bush
yeah,
era.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So the main character is actually not George Bluth Sr., but his son Michael.
Right. Actually, George Bluth Sr. was supposed to be kind of a supporting character that was going to get written off the show.
Yeah.
However, the performance from Jeffrey Tambor was so good that they kept him on.
That's a fun fact. I didn't know that. So Michael Bluth is played by Jason Bateman.
Yes.
And Michael's just kind of like he's the pariah of the family, but he's also the most level-headed. You know, he's like actually got a good head on his shoulders.
What do you mean the pariah of the family?
He's like the outcast.
You think he's the outcast?
Yeah. Job most certainly.
Job.
No. I think Job fits in more.
Uh-huh.
But like, and like, they're a terrible toxic family.
They are a terrible toxic family. I don't know if I would call him, I don't know if he...
But like, what is the one thing that they always say? Don't tell Michael.
Yeah, they don't tell Michael. I guess, all right, fine. All right, fair enough. You got me there, all right.
Because he just doesn't fit in. Like, he's too level-headed for them, you know? But yes, he's like the balance to them. But he's also like, but Michael's got his fucking problems.
Yes.
Let's not play on the bike, okay? It's the poor carpenter that blames his shoddy tools for... Ow! Face! Oh, stupid cornballing piece of...
So then Michael has... three siblings, Lindsay, played by Portia de Rossi. George Oscar Bluth Jr., which they put to Job.
Job, his older brother.
His older brother, which is Will Arnett.
Fun fact about Lindsay. Yeah. She's his twin sister.
Twin sister, yes. Thank you very much. Yeah, they were their twin
allegedly
sisters.
Allegedly.
Let's put parentheses on twin sister.
Well, that develops in season three.
And that's like, they present in the beginning of the show, they present like that's the one he has used to have the closest relationship with. And then they like have, like she's almost the level-headed sibling. Like out of all four of them.
I think she would be the one to listen to him.
Yeah.
When he talks directly, it's like, hey, Lindsay. I think she's the one that'd be like more reflective.
True. She has her moments where she comes through. And then the last one is Buster Bluth.
Buster, the baby of the family.
Then there's his mother, Lucille. Lucille Bluth. And played so she's the Jessica matriarch. There's George Oscar Bluth Sr., played by Jeffrey Tambor. Other people that's in the main cast are the husband of Lindsay, Tobias Funke, played by David Cross.
Fun fact about Tobias Funke, The Sims, I want to say Sims 3, actually features him as like a character in their world. Uh-huh. And they also have Never Nude as a actual like personality trait. So
that is, yeah.
The show creeps into pop culture without realizing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They have a daughter, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe Funke. Michael has a son named George Michael.
George Michael, yes.
And then there is, I think that's it for the
main cast. That rounds out the main cast.
That's like, yeah, the main cast, like in the opening credits. That's who you see.
That is.
And there's just so many other characters.
The supporting cast are some of my favorite characters.
They're so fucking strong. One of my favorite things about Arrested Development is that they do running gags, and they do the running gags beautifully.
They do running gags so well. They also do a lot of plant and deliver.
They do,
without
you
even realizing it. Like, there was, I think in season one is when Buster visits the maid's house, and she has like his hand. Uh-huh. And he says, like, oh, I never thought I would miss a hand so much. When later, like the following season, is where he loses his hand.
Yep. It's like they always knew it was gonna happen.
Like, yeah, the show, the writers were constantly planning ahead, mm-hmm, and leaving you jokes that just pay off so wonderfully later on.
Yep.
It's one of those shows that I think the reason it became more successful after its cancellation and was on streaming on Netflix is because sometimes you wouldn't catch those jokes unless you were watching them one after another.
Yeah. No, 100%.
Yeah.
So George Bluth Sr. has a twin brother named Oscar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. His twin brother.
And one of my favorite running gags is that Oscar might be the father of Buster.
Yes.
So every time Buster's like, I wish my father was here. And then they play music in the background. It's like,
maybe he is.
Or like the running gag of whenever they're sad and they're walking with their heads down in the Charlie
Brown. They pull
Brown
the Charlie
music.
Brown. Yes.
Yeah. So like stuff like that, Mr. F. I mean, it's such a rich, like they put so much effort and they just tackle things beautifully. It's a great show.
One of the best running gags for me for the first run of the show was Tobias's sexuality.
Yeah, that's
the because, you know, it was always hinted that he is a homosexual.
Yes.
Despite the fact that he is. Oh, is he? Was it ever confirmed that he's the biological father of Maybe?
That's the thing. They leave that ambiguous too. Like they like ask you a question and they don't answer it. Like, is he? You
and know? I don't know if it's necessarily that they just forget or because of the rush job, because of the cancellation.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because season three was for sure one of the seasons that was the most rushed.
Yeah.
I think it had some great content, but, you know, they had to kind of figure out a way to kind of end the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was canceled. Yeah. So they knew it was unfortunately coming, so, yeah.
And I don't think they were properly prepared, and the show just never really felt like an ending.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean,
I disagree. I actually think the final episode of the original run was actually,
you think so?
I liked it.
I mean, but still, like, it did feel like a
tie-up. It felt like a good bookend, only because it ended like the show began. It's what's it called? One of the leaders of the Bluth family is arrested.
Yeah.
And stuff. And except this time, you know, it looked like Michael decided just like, well, time to leave.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And you hoped that Michael would just like up and leave and be rid of it, but no.
Yeah. So Michael is the main character.
Yes.
Did you think that he was always a good guy, though?
No. Oh, no. I think there were so many times, and I'm glad that they did this route, where I thought Michael was more problematic than some of the other characters, because the whole show is about like they're rich and they're ignorant and they're like in a bubble. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it like they're really criticizing wealth here.
Yes.
And they're criticizing the 1%, even before that was a term, probably. Was that a term?
It was
early
not
2000s?
A term. No.
No.
The 1%, I mean, I'm sure like maybe it was a term for economics, but it was not something that kind of hit the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't until the Occupy Wall Street movement that happened during the Obama administration.
But this was like around that era where we're starting to realize that there's a problem with bigger families and their like abuse of their power and their money. And like, so it's like taking that and embracing it and making fools out of them and all this stuff. So they make these characters incredibly outlandish and ridiculous and ignorant and all this stuff. But Michael is the level-headed one. He's the wise one. He's the one that you're supposed to resonate with, you know?
You're supposed to be able to understand. Yeah. You're supposed to like kind of empathize the most with
him. But he also makes, to me, the poorest decisions out of all. Especially when it comes to his son.
Yes.
And
talk about helicopter parenting.
Yeah.
He is, I mean, his relationship with his son borderlined on just almost psychopathic, I guess?
Yes. Yeah, very overbearing.
It's creepy.
Yeah. Pretty terrible. But I also think that self-righteous, you know?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that's something that would... It's the first three seasons, they just show you that.
Mm-hmm.
It really starts playing around with it finally in the Netflix run of
the
show.
In the revival, yeah.
Yeah. But we'll talk about that
later. I like Lindsay and the fact that she's kind of like the token liberal. Like, she'll take everything that's kind of like everything that's wrong with liberalism, they'll put within Lindsay's character, especially with, I guess, a female. And then like also like criticize like women of like a wealth and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Not as heavy. Like sometimes they go that route a little too much. I'm like snore.
I don't think it's necessarily, she wasn't, I wouldn't call her liberal.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was more of like an activist for the sake of activism.
Yeah. Which some might say is kind of.
You would think so. But sometimes she took on some causes that would be conservative.
True.
The gun rights episode, for example, in which she was adamantly against gun rights. But then she, what's it called? Starts running with the guy who is on TV. And all of a sudden she's just like, no, more guns for everybody.
Yeah. Very gullible, very flip-floppy.
Yeah, she has just wants absolutely to be involved no moral. The cause. Yeah, she just wants to be involved. She wants to be the center of attention.
Yep.
We just had an amazing fundraiser for Hoop.
Hoop?
My anti-circumcision movement. I think it looks frightening when it's cut off. It's a Doberman. Let it have its ears.
One of the best ones was when she was against the Ten Commandments at a building, in a government building.
Yeah.
Not because of the Ten Commandments themselves and the religious aspect that they have, but because she bumped into them while she was leaving the courthouse.
Yeah.
You know?
And an inconvenience terror.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
She's always starting like little businesses that she'll hope will take off. And one of my favorite was Mommy, What Will I Look Like? Where you you come and take a picture of your baby, and when it prints, it's what they'll look like in 30 years.
And then they get mad, and she's just like, what? Like, this is your baby?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's what is it going to look like? Then there's Job.
Job was my favorite character. To me, he was also the sexiest out of all the characters. There was something very sexual about Will Arnett. It could be the voice. I think it's a voice, but I also think it's kind of just him.
Yeah, but the way he personifies
Job. His voice is very, very very, very handsome.
So Job is the older brother.
Yes,
but he's irresponsible. He's a magician.
He's a magician. The magician storyline for seasons one and two are some of the best ones. Like the Magician's Alliance.
Yes,
Magician's Alliance, best
womanizer. And just like kind of like they present him as like a frat boyish.
What a bad way to put it. I don't know.
What do you mean a bad way to put it?
As a former frat guy, I don't.
Nobody's talking about you, Rolando. Here. Okay. Stereotypical frat boyish, I suppose, for like straight man, like, and like going to spring break and like having that be like his main concern.
Remember he was dating that girl, 18-year-old girl, 19-year-old girl, and he ended up in spring break.
Disturbing.
And?
But now that you think about it,
she was like 18.
Yeah. A lot of Job's behavior is pretty problematic now, at least. Oh. But like they can get away with it. Like when you still go back and watch it, you're like, oh, I'm not as creeped out as I should be by this.
Because it's a smart comedy. And smart comedians can get away with it. Like 30 Rock, watching 30 Rock, some of the stuff that they can get away with because it's a satire is mind-boggling. Because if any other person says some of those jokes, they would be considered offensive.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Like, all right, for example, here on Arrested Development, as a gay man, I should have been offended by the word poof when they are describing a gay person. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh my God, have you seen the latest poof? And Michael's just like, you can't talk about gay people that way. He's like, what? I'm talking about the magazine. Yeah. And then there's like a running sequence of like all the sexual innuendos that he had with the gay guy.
Yes, that's right.
Which is basically just sexual molestation. You know, and I should have been offended, but because the show is consistently, it's a comedy.
It's pointing out the arrogance.
It's satire. I never consider Joe possibly being swinging the way that they ended up swinging him for the revival.
Yeah.
Because in the initial run, he was so hetero, but not like in an obvious, like, I'm so fucking hetero kind of way. Like, he was never looking for women to, like, make a point that he can get with women. Mm-hmm. He was just a very sexual deviant person. You know what I mean?
True. Yeah.
To prove that no prison can hold me, I will incarcerate myself in the penitentiary that holds my own father. Only to escape 24 hours later. No shackles can hold these hands.
That's true. And then there's, to round out the Bluth children, there's Buster.
Buster.
And, you know, mama's ambiguous boy. Father, mama's boy, overgrown child, like really stunted emotionally. They all have Arrested Development to a point.
Yes. Hence the name of the show, why it's so brilliant.
But like him in particular, incredibly stunted. And they really go places with Buster. One of my favorite things is that he dates Lucille, too, who is played by Liza Minnelli.
Yes. Liza Minnelli, too. I don't know how old she was when the show was running, but, like, she's doing flips at one point.
Yeah.
Like, when she's falling on the ground, she's, like, flipping, like, doing a tumble. I'm just like, careful.
Yeah. When I saw that Liza Minnelli was in Arrested Development, I was so happy. I was like, yes, like, fucking, she's amazing. She's incredible. She's so funny.
Is there a girl in your life?
Well, I would hardly call my mother a girl, but yeah, she's still very much a part of my life.
Talk about his relationship with his mother, because that's also related to his relationship with Lucille, too.
Yes, they really explore the fact that they have this weird Freudian thing where, like, they both are very codependent on each other, but then it's, like, really toxic. She's the reason he's emotionally and sexually stunted.
Yes.
Like there's this one episode where they're all going around and they're like talking shit about mom, and then he's like, mom's great, and like, but then when he lets loose and he curses for 2 minutes straight. Yes, he does. So they don't shy away from their bizarre relationship, especially like they go to Mother Boy and she just like wants to keep him as like her little 13-year-old son.
And then the other thing actually though that we didn't mention though for Buster though was the fact that he in season 2 he loses his right hand, I think.
What do you expect, mother?
I'm half machine. I'm a monster.
And that has ramifications for his relationship with Lucille as well.
Yeah. Because we're like throwing references all over the place here. We might be overwhelming people who've never seen Arrested
Hopefully Development. Anyone who listens to, who watches Arrested Development
can hear how
will
much
appreciate
we love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're a new listener, this is not what we're going to
do. Yeah. Then there's the parents, Lucille. George Oscar Bluth Sr. And they just call him George Sr. And most of the original run, George is in prison. And then he goes out on the lam in the second season, I think.
Yeah, first season one, he's in prison. Season two, he's on the run.
Yeah.
Right? Season three, he is under house arrest.
Yeah. And then they, like, them bringing in his identical twin, giving more for Jeffrey Tambor to play around with was just so much fun. Mm-hmm. I think one of my favorite George Sr. moments ever is when he's been living in the attic and he's losing his mind in the model home. They all live in the model home. And that he now has adopted these dolls as his friends.
Yes.
So when Michael, the only person who knows he's up there is Michael, like, he and his father have this relationship. And then Michael goes up there and he's like,
you know, I wine him and dine him, but I don't let him tell me what to do. I don't. Let him tell me what to do.
It's just, it's, you got to see it. It's just so funny.
The show is good.
And then there's Lucille.
Who is.
Is definitely my top three favorite characters.
She is probably one of my favorite ones. Oh, for sure. Top three. It's maybe two or one.
Mm-hmm.
It always changes up, but.
She's a terrible mother. She's a drunk.
Is she a drunk? Conniving. No, she's not. I wouldn't. She's a. I think usually, yeah, sure.
High functioning drunk.
Yeah, she's a high functioning.
I think she's a sophisticated alcoholic.
She is a sophisticated alcoholic. She only drinks wine.
No.
They buy her vodka. Yeah, she does love her vodka.
Yeah. She's great. Yeah, she's in my top three. To round out my top three would have to be maybe the daughter of Lindsay and Tobias. We'll get to Tobias in a minute. But I really love maybe because she's like subtly really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like she doesn't have this outrage. The actress, at least at her age, I guess she must have been a early 20-year-old or maybe even a teenager in the original run, but really quiet and subtle delivery, just like Michael Cera with George Michael.
Mm-hmm.
But they do a lot with Maybe. Maybe is completely neglected by her parents and to the point where she's completely forgotten by almost everyone in the family.
Yeah, it's a running joke.
Where
Lindsay now has no idea her age, where she is.
You guys miss school for that?
And that's when Maybe decided to become a devout Christian.
Do you guys know where I could get one of those gold necklaces with a T on it?
That's a cross.
A cross from where?
She's just completely forgotten and neglected. But because of that, she has to rely on herself to survive. And then so Maybe becomes a con artist and she cons her way into becoming a Hollywood producer.
Yes.
Like, and they just do amazing. And like, this girl is limitless and she's an absolute sociopath.
Apparently, much like Steven Spielberg got his...
conned his way into it. Yeah. It's fucking smart as hell.
Yeah.
And I think she actually is the most like Lucille, but like in a very different way. Like they're both highly sociopathic.
Right.
But they both use it for different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, they use their evil for different ways.
Sure.
But I love Maybe. One of my favorite running gags is babysit me or marry me.
Marry me.
Whoever she's talking to, she's either trying to seem younger than she is or older than she is. So like her thing is like, oh, you're great. Marry me.
Yeah.
I love that. Then there's George Michael, who's played by Michael Cera.
Yeah.
His big thing is that he's awkward.
He's
just like a adolescent boy.
And in love with his cousin.
Yes.
I mean, season one, he's like so adorable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened to him. Like as a human being.
Be nice.
Michael Cera must know. All right, there's no way you look in that mirror and not know that you went through some horrific transformation, right? And that you're cursing God's name daily, all right? Because he was so adorable, like in the first season.
Yeah,
and
I don't know what happened with his nose.
It's his nose, pointy. His like lack of chin.
Yeah, he's a very interesting looking person.
Oh, it's so cute. She sometimes takes a little pack of mayonnaise and she'll squirt it in her mouth, all of it, and then she'll take an egg and kind of she calls it a mayonnaise. Are you okay?
I don't feel so good.
And then there's Tobias.
Tobias Funke.
Who is also a favorite character. Tobias, you know, he's a psychiatrist, but then he gave it up because he wants to learn acting.
He wants to become an actor.
So that's like the running gag throughout all of them.
Well,
he's so passionate about
it. I would think the running gag is and that his he's sexuality. Gay.
And he's never nude.
Yeah, he has the best running gags. Like his desire to be an actor and he'd be friends. What's the actor?
Carl Weathers,
yes. Yeah. Like his relationship with Carl Weathers was some of the funniest shit.
Yeah. And like he was so destined to get inmate number two that he like entered prison learn for his role.
That's where he becomes a friend of Dorothy.
Yeah.
Right?
I've always wanted to remake Annie Hall. Mm. Except I wouldn't want to get in bed with a green producer like a Sofia Coppola, though. Oh, but give me an old pro like a Robert Redford. Oh, I'd jump into bed with him in a second. And I wouldn't just lie there, Michael Bluth, if that's what you're thinking.
And then there's Franklin, actually.
Franklin.
Which could be problematic, but...
Franklin is super problematic. All right. Actually, that's a good segue here to talk about all the problematic shit with the original run of the show. Because there is a lot of it. First of all, the treatment of Hispanic characters on this show is absolutely appalling. And yet, I cannot stop laughing anytime I fucking watch it.
It's appalling because are they embracing the fact that there is a lot of white ignorance, especially towards Hispanic, or are they not aware of it?
It's not white ignorance.
No, because you can't be an intelligent comedy and do that and not be aware
about
it.
Yeah,
I guess it's true.
You almost have to flinch because it's real.
Like, all right, again, this is a Lucille line, right? When the maid is like cleaning and she's, Michael's trying to make her feel horrible and she's just like, oh, please, Michael, they didn't sneak in this country to be your friend.
Yeah.
And the look the poor maid gives her because she couldn't understand English. I was just like, it's a mortifying line. However, when I don't even know. Like, what justifies that line? What justifies that line for not being offensive?
But
I wasn't offended. I knew I should have been offended. It's a fucked up line. But why? Yeah. Why wasn't I?
Because, well, one, because you knew who was saying it and that these people have these beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, this is a believable line. Like, I'm not offended because you're presenting to me a character and I believe that she would say something like that.
Mm-hmm.
If it was real and this was an actual documentary, then I would highly be offensive.
But if
this
it was
an embodiment of people like that.
So if it was, let's say, a drama, though, could you get away with a line like that, you think?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
When you say get away, what do you mean?
Like,
because
not
it's
causing,
like a,
not
because if a drama is portraying a character and their behavior. All right, so this is the racist character. This is a character that has racist tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
Or this character feels a certain way about people.
Yeah.
I get that. That's what being portrayed to me. This is part of the story.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Yeah. You know, it's done in that fashion. But when is the fine line where they say, wow, this whole show is offensive. It's giving the wrong message.
Mm.
You know? Because I don't think that's what Arrested Development is doing.
You don't think it's giving the wrong message?
No, I don't think it's the wrong message.
You think because
I think the characters, I mean, it's intelligent. It's letting us know this is how Lucille
white,
is.
How
no
how
no
rich white
no
think?
For me, I'm just
okay.
seeing it. This is
how
Lucille
they,
is.
Okay.
This is how she treats the people that work for her
mm-hmm.
too. And sometimes it's off played by Michael and saying that Michael is a good guy.
Yeah, he's supposed to be
okay.
He,
you quotation
know,
mark.
Yeah,
he was
good guy.
To be woke before being woke, right?
You know,
but
you
then
know,
they
he's a good
play
guy.
Like, he's not.
Yeah. And also depends on how you receive this information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear a statement like that, and like, if I were to watch that, I'm not going to be like, that's damn right. You know, I wouldn't like agree with her when she says it.
But
like,
what about the audience who would agree with her, though?
Well, that's also, you know, depends on like, again, how you receive and take in information.
Mm-hmm.
Does the show have to be responsible or accountable for the fact that some people are not smart enough to realize that this is actually criticizing your belief and not embracing it and agreeing with you? You know?
I feel like I'm getting mixed messages from you, Nicole, because I feel like you're usually arguing my argument right now.
Especially
with Disney shit.
Wait, are you bringing that up?
But then again, something that's meant as comedy, satirical comedy for adults,
mm-hmm.
not satirical, presentation of reality and what your life can be for children, completely different mediums and content and audiences.
Okay, that's fair. That's a good point.
This is, you know, we talked about the characters. We're not going to get too much into the plot points of the show because
no.
it's just really complex.
I mean, the show...
It's very well written, but
yeah.
there's a lot of material there.
Right, right, right.
But so this show was canceled in 2006, and we thought we would never see it again until Netflix was like, you know what? It's time for an Arrested Development revival. Now, throughout that time period, they were always talking about reviving the show.
I mean, the show even ended with the possibility of trying to make a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. For the longest time, there's going to be a movie, and then finally Netflix... okayed a revival and they just picked it up where it left off in 2013.
Yeah, 2013.
Which is crazy. I thought it was sooner than that.
Nope. That makes sense because me and Eddie had recently started dating. We were maybe dating a year when the show came out and he can attest to how excited I was for the show coming out.
He was excited.
Yeah. I tried to make him watch an episode, but I think I chose a bad episode.
So the revival was interesting too because the way that they approached it was different. It was Netflix. So they had freedom to do the show a little differently. And so normally the show would happen. I mean, it was a sitcom for Fox. So it was like a 22-minute episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like going from one character to the other. Usually you're following Michael. But then like you'll cut to what maybe Lucille is doing or the side story is.
Right.
But for the revival, they decided to make each episode be centered on a different character and what they're doing. And then like, you know, we'll go back like if say at one point they're all like going out to dinner, you'll see what the dinner was like from their perspective and what led them there and what they did after.
Right.
And
I think it's worth noting that when the Netflix original, like when this was a Netflix original,
mm-hmm.
this was one of the earliest Netflix originals.
Yeah.
Like it's 2013. So I think there was Lilyhammer, which no one talks about. That was like the first original show by Netflix.
That's right.
Yeah, no one knows about that show because no one watches it. And I want to say that maybe The Orange is the New Black had just recently come out.
Orange is the New Black has definitely been out since like early 2010 something.
Nope,
yeah.
2013. Mm-hmm. 2013 is what's it called. So it was, I don't know if it came out first
mm-hmm.
before Arrested Development, but Arrested Development was one of the earliest shows that like Netflix produced on its own. That's why it's funny when you see the opening credits, right? It's just like a semi-original
yeah.
Netflix original.
And they still have that. And that's
they do. And it's true. It's, you know, they own up to the fact. It's just like, this isn't our original show. But
yeah.
It makes sense that Netflix would pick the show up because...
Streaming culture.
not just streaming culture, but just because I'm sure that there was just a lot of interest, renewed interest. And once people just start streaming the show, I'm sure they saw the numbers and just like, oh, people are watching the shit out of this show.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's, you know, I think now's the time to capitalize on it.
Yeah, I think certain shows, when streaming culture was introduced, because, you know, before with Netflix, we used to get those little tiny things sent toward our houses. And then it turned into a show where it's like a platform where it's like you could either do that or you could stream things on our website. And that is what Netflix took the fuck off, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they started realizing that certain shows within this new culture, people were like falling in love with all over again. And because Arrested Development, like we said, has Plant and Deliver and has like all, there's just such richness to it. That's a show that like I feel like has been reappreciated through streaming.
Yeah.
And like Gilmore Girls was another one.
Yes. So which like, will be later on.
Yeah.
But to go back to what you were saying about how the show was different in the sense that we had a storyline focused on each character each week, each episode. Yeah, there was some reasons for that, right? First, they just, production-wise, they could not get the whole cast together for a regular shoot. This is the best way that they could accommodate and still give an audience like a story.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing that it was an advantageous. Thank you. It was that word. No, it was, I mean, there was, they really took a risk in trying to make the show because they were trying to capitalize on the fact that, yeah, you could stream this show. So they were really capitalizing on the fact that people would stream this all together.
Mm.
If you had watched this show from beginning to end in like one or two sittings, the show would actually be better than if you had like watched it the way I watch it, which is just watching one or two episodes an evening. It doesn't flow as well, right? Because a lot of the jokes relied on the fact that you'd have to watch it back to back together because of the of either their running gags or some of the hidden jokes that would happen like between episodes.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. I think I don't know. Critics, do you know how they did? How critics liked it? I think it was like mixed.
It was mixed response,
right? Yeah. And I think even from audiences though, it was also mixed. I was a little disappointed.
I was definitely disappointed.
You know, I think I gave it more credit than it deserves because of the fact that they tried to do something different with the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I think overall it was just like kind of like just not as good as the original.
Yes. I questioned as to whether or not the revival was needed because there was such a long gap. And like, I was like, is this something that just like now doesn't work that well in 2013?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I questioned it, I was just like, why am I not responding to it? Is it too large? Are they trying to go too much either for something new
mm-hmm.
or like draw back to what we liked about it and just too much time has passed? There was like a lot of factors and I, at least why I looked at it, I was like, this isn't the same.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it started picking up steam towards the end.
Yeah.
I think the most... All right, so what we should talk about, I guess, here is like what the show, what the story was about.
Sure.
Nicole, can you summarize what the show was about? Because it was all over the place. All right, so I can try I can try to give you a quick rundown.
Okay.
Season 4 takes place immediately after Lucille has been arrested at the end of season 3.
Yes.
And the family has all come together and they're trying to figure out, like, all right, what's our next plan?
Mm-hmm.
Michael has kind of had enough, so he tries to go at it on his own, starts his own company, and it falls into extreme debt with Lucille too. Meanwhile, Lucille ends up going to prison because no one in the family showed up to trial to like be a witness for her. Lindsay, Tobias separate after mm-hmm. they bought a house together, but then they separate after the housing crisis. George Michael, he goes to college. Creates a fake app, like it's called fake Faceblock. It's supposed to be like the opposite of Facebook,
yeah.
But it's not real. He was just doing it as a ploy to get girls,
mm-hmm.
and it ends up steamrolling into something bigger than it is. And he becomes like a tech billionaire without any idea of what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Joe gets in a relationship with Anne. I think they get married, gets divorced, and then he eventually gets in a relationship with Tony Wonder, played by Ben Stiller from the original run.
Yeah.
Another magician. And he goes on full on homosexual. Who else am I missing? Buster does something with the military in his hand. I don't remember what maybe. So maybe was kind of all like had no real.
Yeah, maybe it's all over the place.
She was all over the place. But I guess everything comes to a head where at Cinco de Mayo, which is like kind of the main plot point for the show, because Lindsay. What they're trying to do is, like, George Sr. and Lucille are trying to build a wall. So they're trying to build a wall between Mexico and the U.S. before Trump made it popular, right?
Crazy.
Which gets a reference in the newest season, in season 5, when, you know, there's like a news clip of Donald Trump talking about the wall. Yeah. And Lucille's like, that's my idea. And then what's it called? And then Trump goes, and just like, and Mexico's going to pay for it. And then Lucille's like, well played. Again, I should be mortified and so offended by this fucking joke because I do not jive well with the Trump administration. However, again, the show was so fucking good. Like, even that joke was very well done, mm-hmm. despite the quality of that season, of the current season. You know what I mean? It's not a good season, but however, when they make me laugh, they make me laugh.
Yeah.
I'll say that about these recent two seasons for Netflix. Mm-hmm. Like,
they do.
When they're funny, they're funny. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just unfortunately the show is not as funny as it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely, like, I'm not laughing out loud as much as I would like to, and as much as I did in the original.
So that's, like, the main storyline, right? They're trying to build a wall between Mexico and China. Mexico and America. And they're trying to get the U.S. government to pay for it. However, the families' lives are falling apart so much that, like, they're having trouble, like, kind of getting away with the scheme.
Yeah.
And then also, at the same time, George Michael and Michael are fighting over possibly the same woman without realizing
it. Ron Howard's daughter.
Ron Howard's daughter, played by Isla Fisher. Her name is Rebel Howard. Did you see Bryce Dallas Howard in the
drool? But that was great. That was really funny.
I couldn't believe they actually got her. I was like, oh my god, it's Bryce
playing herself. Yeah, that was fantastic.
Talking shit about Michael Cera's
character. Yeah, being really nice and fake, and then talking shit to the first person she sees.
I kind of hope that's how she gets in real life.
You know? And then Lucille too goes missing. And then that's what sets up this new season that's out currently. And then the second half of that was just released. So we haven't finished it. We're both halfway through it. So we can't tell you whether or not they find Lucille too.
No, I can guarantee. She's not in the show anymore. That's why.
They did that, yeah. Because Liza's like, too sick to do stuff.
Yeah, so.
But also.
Which is a shame. Lucille 2 is no longer on the show. And actually, by the fifth season, actually, Portia de Rossi is also not in the show.
Yeah, what was up with that?
Oh, no, she's retired from acting. So she only did, like, what's it called? She was only in the show just to, like, try to give them enough material to work with, but she's no longer.
Oh, so that's why. Because I know she made an exception for Arrested Development.
Yeah, well, she was, like, green-screened in the most recent season. She was, if you notice, any shots that had her, she was just green-screened. Her interactions with Lucille, for example. There was, like, a scene where, like, she's wearing, they put, like, a blanket over her so that way they could have Lucille interact with somebody because Portia de Rossi just, you know, she's done with acting.
Oh, wow.
I mean, if I were married to Ellen DeGeneres, I wouldn't be acting either. Let's be fucking real here. Ellen DeGeneres has money
to
burn.
They're the power lesbian couple. You know? Like, they don't need to do anything. True. Oh, yeah. I just thought, I was very like, where's Lindsay? But I thought because I saw her, I thought I'd see her again.
And a lot of season 5 relies on the fact that she's supposed to be running for office.
Yeah.
You know, so they really worked her to, like, like, you really would figure that she would show up more often. Yeah. But because she shows up a lot in season 4.
Yes.
And again, but what's it called? Speaking of, like, showing up, right? That's the other problem I think I have with this run was just, like, how bad the CGI composting was.
Especially when they're watching TV.
Yeah. It's just, like, weird. Like, yeah. I guess they were trying to find a solution to the fact that the cast isn't going to be together. So how are we going to do this? We'll film their parts separately and kind of, like, put it together in post. And it was creepy. It was weird. It didn't look right.
Yeah.
You know?
It's also weird because talking about that, like, a lot of these characters have obviously aged, you know, even between, like, the two recent revival seasons.
Yeah.
So it's just, like, interesting because now, like, you know, Job looks so much older.
Job does look so much older.
And just, like, you know, he's got all this, like age weight, you know? Tobias, too.
Tobias.
Jason Bateman still, like, looks skinny and stuff, but so wrinkled. And, I mean, the one who still looks great is Lucille.
Oh yeah, Lucille.
She looks amazing.
She does. Although by season five, Lucille, she even sounds differently.
She does. Yeah.
She doesn't have like that sexy voice. Her voice used to be so fucking. I think her voice is sexy even for like an older lady.
Yeah.
And I guess I hope her voice didn't run out in time for Archer. Mm-hmm. She does the voice of Archer's mom on Archer, the animated TV show.
Yeah.
And it's basically just Lucille.
So they just took
Lucille and just like threw her, animated her.
Mm-hmm. And then Michael Cera just like has not aged well.
He did not. Oh, but maybe aged. What's it called? Maybe aged. Interesting, right? Mm-hmm. Because in the first chunk of the revival in season 4, She kind of didn't look her best, realistically. Yeah. But by season five, though, she looks great. Yeah.
And then, like, I really like what they did with Maybe.
Yeah, I think Maybe was the character that had the most...
The strongest
storyline.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that she was all over the place, they kind of gave her, like, an actual growth. Yeah. Everybody else, I didn't care for them anymore.
Yeah, no, for sure. The Job thing, I'm losing interest in Job.
I had no idea. Like, I thought I'd be more interested in season five, the fact that Job is, like, possibly gay now, but they didn't
They're dragging their feet on that.
It's just, like, just either make him gay or fucking stop teasing me.
Yeah, you know? No, for sure.
As a gay member, as someone who actually used to think that Job was attractive, it's just like, all right, fucking homo him out. Like, Always Sunny dragged their feet on making Mac gay, for example. Mm-hmm. However, when they made him gay, they made him gay. Mm. There was no turning back from it. Here, they're just dragging their feet. And it's just like, if I have to wait 6 years between seasons, I'm not going to wait that long.
That's true. Come on, Ben Stiller. Like, be in more than one episode and, like, solve this.
I don't even think Ben Stiller was in the... I think his voice was, but he wasn't even in the season five.
What about when they were on the float?
Not in season five. They were in season... he was in season
Tony five. Wonder. I mean, he gets the cement, but we see him there. Briefly.
Okay. All right. I must have missed that.
But one of my favorite jokes with Maybe, though, is where Stan Stitwell is, like, passes out in the bridge. She's like, I didn't even get to tell him. And she hovers over. It's like, it's over. And I need you to move out. So perfect.
Oh, the scams that she's running.
Yeah.
She also looks great in wigs.
She does, yeah.
Like, all the wigs, like, the white wig really went for her.
And the embodiment of that six-year-old woman.
Yes! I mean,
yeah, she's killing it.
Maybe is proving to be, like, the strongest
character.
Style, I think also as the actress, like, she also kind of showed the most range out of everybody. Which is, have you seen her show on TBS, The Missing Person Search Party?
No, I haven't.
No, she's good in it. This is her show.
She's a great actress. Yeah. I mean, I love that she, like, the fact she has freckles. Yeah. And, like, I just love her complexion.
Yeah.
But yeah, so some of the storylines I don't care for either.
I mean, I was...
The rebel thing I don't care for anymore.
Oh, I don't care about the rebel storyline. Yeah. I do not. I do I love the exploration of Michael Cera and Jason Bateman. Like, their kind of relationship kind of butting heads. But they were trying to resolve that too quickly in season five. It's just like, I kind of want to see them going at it because they deserve it.
Yeah.
He's, what's it called? Like... George Michael has every right to be mad at his father.
Yeah.
He kind of stole his college experience a little towards the end.
Oh, yeah. That pissed me off so much and made me uncomfortable.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The shower scene?
Yeah.
That was... I think that's where this show kind of... The revival kind of went to places that I didn't care for.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of them, right? They got too overt with everything that was so subtle about the first three seasons.
Yeah.
They kind of decided to go overt for the Netflix ones. The relationship between George Michael and his father all of a sudden became, like, gross.
Yes.
Same thing happened with Lucille and Buster. I'm talking about that sequence with her smoking, blowing it out into his mouth, and he would exhale.
Yeah.
Funny, but they held that fucking scene for, like, 5 minutes, and it just became gross.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just some of these things that they try to do on the show that just, I feel like they didn't work. And it's a shame because the original three seasons were so fucking good that, like,
so
I don't
strong.
Know. Yeah, like, I don't know if, although I'm going to,
I do think, though, season five was an improvement from season four.
Oh, agreed.
And
because
and
they had most of this cast together.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think they learned, you know, from what they did. And they went back to a sequential episode instead of, like, one person each episode and stuff for a number of reasons. Yeah.
Which actually reminds me. Mm. So did you see season four during its original edit?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You saw the original edit, not mm-hmm. the re-edit. Because they had... recently re-edited it
to
just in time for season five to try to so in the original edit, right, for anyone who doesn't know, the original edit features individual, like, each episode is just one character.
Yeah.
Then the re-edit that they did just in time for season five was they took the entire season and re-edited it to be more like the style of the original show, in which everyone's story is happening at the same time. It's in sequential order. And however, the downfall for that was that it relied too heavily on the narration of Ron Howard.
Yeah.
And if you watch it, it's mostly just Ron Howard just giving you all this, like, information that you need for the show to keep moving. And it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
Did you try to watch that by any chance?
No, I did not. Oh, but if you do go back and watch it, then maybe, I don't know. Which should they watch?
I would say watch the original way you intended to watch season four, which is, like, each person has his own episode.
Yeah. Even though it's different.
It's different. You'd have to binge it. I would say binge, like, maybe two episodes at a time. But honestly, if you skip it and go right to season five, you might be better off.
They'll, like, fill you in on
everything. They will fill you in on everything. The way the show is written, like, they will, if there's a joke to be understood, they will go back to it.
For sure.
You know?
One of the things I liked in season 5, and then we can wrap it up and just like give an overall opinion about it, but is the Gay Mafia with Tommy Toon. And I didn't know, that was another instance where I was like, because they're in Mexico a lot, and the whole wall thing, there's a lot of Hispanic jokes too, that I'm just like, I don't know how I feel about them, and I agree with you, more so in this revival than in the original series.
And I think the reason is because this revival doesn't feel as smart as the original run.
It doesn't. But going back to the Gay Mafia thing, really quick before we tackle that, is that Tommy Toon is the head of the Gay Mafia, and Tommy Toon is a Broadway legend.
Okay.
And so like, anytime he makes any threats, he's like, because then you'll hear this, and he does this beautiful... this beautiful tap dance, and at the end of it he's like, that's me dancing on your grave. Right? And then like they make all these references, and the way that they make him is a very old school gay, which is like Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, and then Job sits there and he's like, and then like all, or wait, he's like, you're straighter than an Oklahoma highway, and it's like, no, Oklahoma, you were in Oklahoma, and then he bursts into Oklahoma production number. And I love it. Because that's my kind of gay.
Oh my god.
But then he like criticizes Job for not knowing like his gay history and stuff. But then I'm like, well then I don't know, because this is a different type of gay. Like it's a very not real gay anymore. Like, because like if anymore, you came in front of that Gay Mafia, you would probably be straight in his eyes because you don't know like,
oh yeah, I'd be like, what's it called? I'd be stoned with glitter. I don't know. See, but, I can't be as smart as the fucking writer is.
Yeah, but it's just like, it's an old school type of gay, but then it's like, but it's still funny, like, you know, we're laughing about it and I still appreciate it, and it's like my kind of gay, but like at the same time, like, and then I don't know, I'm like, all right, are they just ill-informed, or are they just taking this one stereotype and embracing it for like comedic effect, because it's like, let's go overboard with the fact that he's just like a theater guy.
Yeah.
So, and that's how like I think I feel most about like the stereotypes and stuff that they tackle.
Yeah.
But that was just a favorite of mine. I loved that scene when he burst out into Oklahoma. I was fucking dying.
Oh, I actually had some really... there were some scenes that I actually very much enjoyed in this.
Mm-hmm.
I just... right now, I can't... they're not as memorable as some of the stuff I've seen in the first three seasons.
They're
and
not.
It could be... like, I'll say this. Like, it could very well be the fact that I've seen them so many times.
True.
And these... they don't have that repeatability factor.
They don't,
especially season 4. It does not.
It doesn't, no. Season 5 is definitely, I think, an improvement.
Oh, season 5 is an improvement. I don't think it's... I mean, it's still lackluster compared to the original 3 seasons. Yeah.
And it's like, I saw where they were trying to go with it, but, like, still it wasn't there. Like, I see what they're trying to do with Tobias and his new son.
Ugh,
but,
no,
like, those moments, no, I don't laugh out loud
Tobias
with.
Tobias and his son did not... I don't need that story no. at all.
The only part that I thought was funny when they were, in the middle of, like, the Mexican border and they thought they saw Lindsay.
Oh, then they go... it's a cactus with a plastic bag.
That was funny. But yeah. Okay, so...
oh, I forgot one of my favorite jokes. So I remember now what my jokes is.
Which one?
So you know how in season 4 there was a scene where George Sr. puts on a wig?
Yeah.
And he starts playing like acting like a woman. Mm-hmm. So this is actually before he actually had a role on Transparent, right?
Yes.
But then there was a recall on season 5 when he's again in the wig talking, and then he tosses away his... and then the narrator, Ron Howard, goes, is just like... George Sr. would never get any awards for his portrayal as a woman.
Yeah.
Which is great because he won the Emmy.
Mm-hmm.
Hilarious. Yeah. Although, yeah, speaking of which, Jeffrey Tambor, what are our opinions here?
Yeah, so I was going to say, do we also remember that a part of the reason that there was such a gap was because of the allegations made against Jeffrey Tambor and the fact that Jessica Walter herself made an accusation against him, and she felt like the fact that there's a lot of men on the show, that her voice was not being heard?
Well, that was actually... that wasn't...
that was after season 4, before season, or during the
that was during the Transparent debacle.
Yes.
They were already, I think they were already in post-production at that point. Because, yes. What's it called? The Jessica Walters moment actually happened when she was doing the press run for the lead up to season 5.
Mm.
So this was all going on, I guess, during. I guess Netflix at that point had invested too much money. They're like, we can't fucking,
yeah.
we're not jumping ship right now.
I didn't like the fact that Jessica Walter was being, what's that word, like, dismissed by her male colleagues.
Yeah, especially considering she's so fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, she was a treasure in the first 3 seasons. In the last 2 seasons, she wasn't as strong. But that's not her fault. That's the writing's fault.
No, for sure.
You know?
And, yeah. But whatever. So, I just wanted to say one thing before we wrap this up. Guys, first of all, clearly we love Arrested Development.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed this episode and didn't overwhelm you with our references and going all around the board. But like, if you get anything, like watch the show. It's funny, especially the original run.
The original run, for
there
sure.
There are 22 episodes. They're 22 minute episodes, you know, really good stuff. So one question I wanted to ask you, not if it was needed or anything, but how do you feel about the fact, going back to the Trump thing and incorporating that, and that the satire is almost too good that it mocks our reality?
Okay.
And then they can incorporate it.
Yeah.
And then how do we feel about the fact that, okay, let's have Lucille Bluth interact with like our president.
Uh-huh.
And then like we can laugh about it there, but then like the lines get drawn, because it's almost hard to believe too that like we are where we are. And like, sometimes it makes me really kind of like, I feel like I'm living in a parody of America sometimes.
I mean, okay, so this is good point. Good question. I mm-hmm. think, I don't know. Did they predict the fucking future? Because season four was about the fucking wall and shit.
Yeah.
And this was before Trump made that a talk. Did Trump watch Arrested Development and decide this is going to be my fucking platform right here? A wall.
But then like when you look at comedy and like how The Simpsons, like they predicted the future. No, they were just astute and like perceptive enough to realize that we were going in that direction.
Yeah.
And like Arrested Development is a beautiful satire on American culture and politics, especially... I'm going to have to say more conservative, like Republican kind of lifestyles.
Yeah.
The Bush family.
Uh-huh.
And then like just like an overall like presentation of like a wholesome American family that like they throw in Romney references this time around. So it's just like an overall like presentation of like conservative America.
Yeah.
And it's just, I found it really bizarre because I've said it, like when Trump got in office, I'm like, I feel like I'm in a parody of America.
And that happens a lot. Look at the show. All right. So here's a great example for Julie Louis-Dreyfus, who was on the show, the original run.
Yeah.
So she has that show on HBO Veep, where that show was a satire on like politics.
True.
And now nothing that they can do can compare the reality that we're in now. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think the same thing is said about this show. Like season four felt over the top, sure, but like now compared to the reality that we are in right now, yeah. It feels like, well, I guess what is a more extreme version of that?
Mm.
And we can't fathom one.
Yeah, I mean,
because life, God forbid, it becomes a reality.
It's like life imitates art, art imitates life to a next fucking level.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting, and like my mind went in all these directions when I saw that moment, because I'm like, this is like Murphy Brown, Dan Quayle moments where like, you know, media is so impactful and then we get confused as to like real life and media characters and like their importance to like just it's just crazy.
Yeah.
So you just gotta watch the show and tell us your thoughts on this aspect of our American life. I'm Ira Glass. No. but yeah, so please watch Arrested Development after you listen to this episode. Tell us what you think. Send us an email.
At remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Find us on Instagram.
Remakes, Reboots, Revivals.
Yes, and Facebook.
At Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
Yes. Yeah, so, and we were not paid by Imagine Entertainment or Netflix. Do this episode.
Right.
The next week's episode.
Of Remakes, that's true.
And Revivals.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just so wrong about that, Rolando. I can't believe you would even think that.
I guess it's a wrap then.
Yeah, it's all a wrap.
Cool.
Until next week,
stay unoriginal.